I'm here with Martin Edwards, current chair of the Property Litigation Association, and Matthew Ditchburn, chair of the PLA's Law Reform Committee, to discuss what the organisation is working on in 2018. First off, Martin, for the benefit of those listening who might not be familiar with the Property Litigation Association, let's start by you telling us a little something about the PLA. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, we're a national association, we're non-profit making, and we're open to those lawyers involved in property litigation and property mediation. We've been going for about 23 years, and the focus of the association splits roughly into two halves. There's a focus on the one half on education and training and networking for our members, not just with themselves but with other professionals involved in the property world. And on the other half we have our law reform and lobbying operation. So that's us in a nutshell. We're actually a large association. There are about 70 individuals who are involved on a day-to-day basis running the association across the country. And we are divided into five committees. One is tasked with education training, as you'd expect. Another law reform, which is Matthew's committee. We have the junior PLA, a regional arm of the PLA, and also, very important, website and marketing. That's us.
We'll hear a bit more about some of those roles that the PLA plays in a little while. But how many members have you got currently?
Well, I'm really pleased because our total membership now currently is about 1,400 members. And about 2 years ago, we were at 1,200. So we're seeing quite a growth in our membership over that period. And of that, around 47% of our total membership are women. We have 62% members based in the regions, 38% in London. And our junior PLA members, that's members who are up to 10 years post-qualification, account for 42% of our total membership.
That's a pretty diverse membership, all
in all. It is, very much so, yes.
And how important do you think the PLA is for the profession?
Yeah, so I think that the property litigation is involved in all major business challenges presently, whether you look at Brexit, smart cities, or the flood of, say, the recent retail CVAs. In all of those scenarios, you will have, I'm sure, a property litigator somewhere working in the background. So I think that in terms of the importance of property litigation, it's a very, very busy part of the profession, and I think the Property Litigation Association representing our members in that industry is extremely important in giving a public voice to property litigation practitioners across the country.
And then throwing this open to both of you, I mean, you spoke about some of the major issues at the moment, and it does seem like sort of every morning you sort of wake up to news of yet another CVA. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges faced by those practicing in property litigation, and how does the PLA help with those challenges?
I'd say in the realms of law reform, the biggest challenge is actually getting the attention of government to change anything. There are lots and lots of areas in which our members think that the current law could be reformed and improved, and some of those cases we would say are quite compelling. The Law Commission itself, in its 13th programme of reform, commented that shortcomings in leasehold property law was leading to rises in costs to the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds and was damaging the value of freehold property, and yet the government decided not to do anything about reforming leasehold property law, and we all know why that is, because if it's not Brexit, they're not interested. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face. I think to bring it sort of down to ground level, one of the points that we've been focusing on for a long time is the quality of court service that property litigators experience. Even though property litigation cases might not be the biggest cases that you read about, there might not be the multi-billion pound cases that you read about, in terms of volume and sheer numbers, I would expect that a very, very large percentage of all cases going through the courts are property related. And because of the way the civil procedure rules are put together, a lot of those cases are put through the county courts, and our members experience, should we say, inconsistent quality, or indeed not very good quality of service from some county courts. And so we spend a lot of time talking to courts and the judiciary and the court service about improving experience for our members and indirectly their clients.
Mm-hmm. And if I could add to that, when I became chair last year, it coincided with the launch of the Business and Property Courts. And I think now the biggest challenge we all face is we're in an era when traditionally in our area the pace of change was, can I say, perhaps more glacial, and now it's seismic. And really, to endorse what Matthew said, it doesn't matter where you look now in our world, there is change. So I think the job of our association really is to keep our members not just abreast of those developments and making sure we're up to date and as to what's going on, but also to get involved with the debate. And I was very pleased personally when, obviously, we have Liz Peace, who's our president, who's sort of a year and a half into that role now. And with Liz's background in the commercial property industry, she's just the sort of person that we need there to help take us to the next level.
Yeah. I agreed, and Martin's absolutely right about the pace of change as well. So just looking at the consultations which we've been asked to feed into in terms of the court process, this year already we've had all lease renewals moving from Central London County Court to the first tier tribunal. Mm-hmm. We've had reform to the rules around disclosure in the business and property courts, which effectively abolishes standard disclosure and replaces that with a whole series of different things. And these are two, I mean, very, very major pieces of reform. Mm-hmm. And we've been absolutely in the centre of those changes. We've been in speaking to the relevant judges, masters and the court service to make sure that our members' views are put across.
And so against the background of those challenges and that pace of change that you mentioned, do you each have a view on whether this is a good time for people to be entering the profession?
Well, I would say yes. I think just looking around at my fellow colleagues and other property litigators, I don't think we've ever been busier as a profession. I think that is probably a reflection of the market and the pace of change. And Martin's absolutely right. When you look at something like CVAs in the retail market, which is on the front page of every newspaper and seems to have been so for as many weeks as I can remember. Yeah, that's an insolvency issue. Yeah, that's a business and economic issue. But it is absolutely a property litigation issue. And it's very exciting to be a practitioner that is at the centre of those legal developments when they happen. And it is cutting edge. People that always think of property litigation as being cutting edge, but this is a good example of when it is.
It certainly is.
And I could add to that, we are litigators. And as with any form of litigation, in times of change, it's a great time to be a litigator. Change brings more opportunity for dispute and conflict. And I think that's generally a good time to be entering the profession generally as a litigator.
Property litigation moves in real time as well, which is why I personally find it an exciting and rewarding area to practice in. When client rings you up and says, I've got squatters in my property right now, you've got half an hour to get them out. I mean, that's about as real time as you get, and I'm not sure you experience that in every single area of practice or litigation.
And speaking of those entering the profession, of course, you mentioned earlier one key arm of the PLA is the junior PLA, who are there to, I assume, to help those sort of new entrants to the profession and guide them through the process. So how would you describe how it operates and what it has to offer young property litigators?
Okay, well, the JPLA is extremely important to the association. As I mentioned earlier, it accounts for 42% of our total membership. And I think anyone joining the JPLA gets a huge benefit in terms of developing their own network amongst not just their own lawyers, but also a network with other property professionals, particularly with the PBA and with the RICS, so the junior PBA and Matrix with the RICS. As an association, we nurture the JPLA. Obviously, they are the future. We have our own essay competition, which the Estates Gazette kindly assisted us with.
These days, if you don't
EG,
mind.
EG, I'm sorry, yes.
Get the branding right.
And I think with EG's assistance going forward, it's a big thing in our calendar. But going back to the JPLA, I think that members sit across all the regions. They're on all of the committees, It offers them great opportunity to develop their own network. And as we all know, as you get more senior in years, the connections you've built in your early career are so important. So I think JPLA is very important to the association. But I think the JPLA members do get a huge benefit from being members.
I would imagine your education arm is particularly important for the junior PLA, but presumably it sort of continues to support the profession right the way through. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. It's never too late to learn. Well, the law keeps changing, and we tend to tailor our education programmes so they cater for the junior end and the more senior experienced end as well. So it's things for even old-timers like me and Martin to do.
But I must say, the JPLA often does lead the way. And though I'm not embarrassed to say this, but the checklists that they've published on our website, you know, that was innovative for us. We encourage all of that. And also with the website generally, that resource, new initiatives such as the Speaker's Corner, where we have regular updates from other property professionals, is a great benefit to all of us, but particularly junior members.
Now, Martin, you're pretty much halfway through your year as chair of the PLA, and what have been your key areas of focus so far?
Okay, well, so far the two that I would highlight would be the Northern Training Day, which took place in Leeds last week, where I attended, and that was close to my heart because prior to being a chair, I ran the Regions Committee for the association. And the objective there really was to try and widen our network across the country. Most of our events have been held Oxford, London. It was a sort of London-centric focus. Obviously, over the last few years, we've seen that shift. And I think the Northern Training Day was something that I'd got as a real objective to make happen, or help make happen. Obviously, we have our committee that has actually made it happen. but it was great to see last week that it was oversubscribed. And a really great programme. We had some excellent speakers. We had Joe Wicks there, the chair of the PBA, giving an update on rescission. Members in the room got a huge amount from the whole event, and I'm pleased to say that will now be a fixture in our calendar going forward. So we now have Oxford, London, and a Northern Training Day. So that was a big objective of mine. Secondly, I think on the lobbying, and as I mentioned earlier with Liz, joining us as president, the actual focus on giving more profile to active lobbying and making things happen and influencing change. Matthew's obviously involved in that on law reform, and doing what we can to actually really take that, as I said, to another level. That's been a big achievement so far, I think.
And what do you have lined up for the rest of the year?
Well, I think be more of the same in terms of the change and the reform agenda. There's always something coming down the line. The other objective I'd like to do, but as I say, I'm more than halfway through now, so the time does go very quickly. I would like to see if we can get more engagement from our more experienced practitioners in the association. So they are, you know, we have a wide range of membership, national, and I would like to see if there's some way in which we can accommodate them within the association. So we've got some thoughts on that.
Senior PLA type.
Well, not no, not senior PLA, but
OA PLA.
Matthew, let's focus in a little bit on that reform work you've already spoken about a bit. Now, the PLA are an important voice for the profession when it comes to law reform. So, can you outline how the Law Reform Committee operates?
Yeah, sure. So there's 12 members. I'm the chair. I've been the chair since the end of last year. But I've been on that committee for, I think, about 11 or 12 years, so quite a while. And I think our job is really twofold, and I like to sort of think it as an upstream and downstream approach. On the upstream side, it is our job to have connections with the decision makers for legislation and process change. So we regularly talk to the Law Commission, to the MOJ, HMCTS, to the Bar, to the RICS. So we have that network of people that we speak to regularly, and we use that to further our law reform agenda. And I think it's very important that we're able to have that point of contact and to relay the concerns of our members. The other aspect of what we do is to make sure that we are properly reflecting the interests and views of our membership. We're 12 people. I think we're a pretty diverse group. We have different people that represent different regional areas and different skill sets. Mm-hmm. We're not just all commercial lawyers from the city. But I'm very keen as chair to make sure that wherever possible we are reflecting the views of the members as often as possible. So any consultation that comes out, we will make sure that there's a notification put on the website, there's an email goes out to members seeking their views. And we always encourage members to come forward to us with their views, any issues that they think that they have. We're very, very happy to pick up and take on. Court service reform is a good example of that, because we get a lot of feedback from members about specific experiences they have of, you know, not very good court service, the judge didn't turn up, that kind of thing. And we are very good at collating that and referring that back on. So, for example, we've just formed a specific PLA user group with HMCTS. So this is just an interface between us as a property litigation body and HMCTS, just putting forward our views on reforming the court process and improving the experience of our members.
And you don't just work with lawyers when you're sort of considering reform proposals, do you? You sort of open it up to the wider property world.
Absolutely. So sometimes that's barristers, and sometimes that's the Law Society, and sometimes that's the RICS. So a really good example of that, which is very current, is the issue of boundary disputes. So there's been a lot of focus on this recently because of the boundary disputes bill that's passing through the House of Lords. I'm not saying that that is necessarily ever going to become law, but it's certainly attracted a lot of focus and attention. And it puts forward quite an interesting suggestion, which is to apply a sort of party wall dispute resolution approach to all boundary disputes, where all boundary disputes would be taken away from the lawyers, taken away from the courts, and handed to an independent surveyor to reach a binding determination. Now, we as the PLA have a couple of concerns about that. I mean, one of them is that we don't think all boundary disputes are necessarily just technical surveying disputes. Yeah. Sometimes it's a legal dispute about what does the deed say, or is there adverse possession? Or is it a mixture? You know, is it both technical surveying and legal? And is an independent surveyor the right person to disentangle that mess and come to a view? So that's one concern we have about it. And the other one is a sort of slightly more principled point about, really, is it right to deny people their day at court? I mean, you might have your view about boundary disputes, and I think it's right to say that a lot of boundary disputes cost a lot of money, take a lot of time, and don't really achieve very much. But I'm not sure that you can generalize and say no boundary dispute should ever be allowed to go to court again. So we've got a number of views about that. And off the back of that, the Civil Justice Council has started an initiative where they want to provide litigants with an alternative to court litigation. And they've drawn together a working group comprising the PLA, representatives of the PLA, and representatives of the RICS. Mm-hmm. We've had a number of very constructive meetings around that. One of the outputs is that we're now looking to put together a joint RICS-PLA boundary disputes resolution service, which will point litigants or potential litigants in the direction of appropriately qualified and experienced people that can help them determine their dispute without going through the time and costs and, frankly, agony of the courts. So that's a great example of us working collaboratively with other professionals.
That sounds really useful. And what are some of the other pressing areas of reform that you've been working on recently?
Well, I would refer you to my EG article from, I think it was in March that it was published, and that was headed, "Is Brexit Getting in the Way of Property Law Reform?" And this is me on my soapbox about getting the government's attention. And one of the ways that we've done that is we've put together our sort of 10-point manifesto of the top 10 most pressing areas for law reform that we think that the government needs to get onto straight away. So I would refer you to that if you want to know. But I mean, you know, the top ones are obviously the 1995 Act and the complete mess over intragroup assignments and guarantees. Obviously, the 54 Act, that's partially been addressed because of the current pilot whereby some lease renewals, particularly Central London lease renewals, are being referred out of the court system into the tribunal system. We support that in principle because it addresses one of our complaints about lease renewals taking forever and going nowhere. But we seem to have gone from the sublime to the ridiculous now, where lease renewals are put through a fast-track process in the tribunal lasting 20 weeks end-to-end, and the parties aren't given any option to put the brakes on the process or stay the process, even if they've agreed and they think that they will settle and they just need a bit of breathing space in which to draw up the documents. You know, we're very, very supportive of streamlined, efficient litigation, but we don't think that people should be forced to litigate against their will. So that is something that we're very interested in. Martin has just written to the president of the FTT to express our concerns, and we are a member, an active member of the Business Lease Renewals User Group, which regularly meets with, not as regular as we would like, but we meet with the FTT and put our views across. So that, you know, they're the top two. Obviously, the 87 Act is another one, which is constant bugbear, and in particular, the unintended consequence of mixed-use buildings and the right of first refusal for residential tenants, and whether or not they should really get first refusal on your shop letting or selling a bit of airspace or selling a bit of grass verge. That is, I think, something that our members would like to see addressed. It sounds like a technical point, but believe me, if you practice in this area, you see it coming up time and again, and it leads to delay and cost. And explaining it to the clients in a way that they don't think that we've all gone mad as a profession is increasingly challenging.
But I think Matthew's being far too modest, because he's forgotten, he's left one thing out of that list, which was law reform's biggest victory so far has been the Mazars case, and staircase tax. But the government took on board the suggestions to the draft bill put forward by the LRC, and actually our vice chair, Brian Johnston, who's the next PLA chair, was very instrumental in that. So I think that's been our biggest real success so far in the area of reform.
And that was item number six in our top 10 manifesto. So only nine more to go.
And as you say, I'm sure people will be rushing to find out more detail about those areas and the other ones on EGI.
Yes, follow the link below.
And yes, you mentioned Mazars, obviously one of your big victories. And how successful do you think the PLA has been over the years in championing the views of its members and pushing for reforms, and what do you think are some of your other sort of biggest wins?
I would certainly mention court service. So 3 years ago we did a survey of all of our members to get their views on the quality of court service, and we plugged that straight back into government, and they were quite, I think, shocked and surprised by the depth of feeling out there. Literally since that time we've been in a constant dialogue with HMCTS about how they can improve service, leading to, as I've said, most recently that specific PLA user group that we formed. And they tell us quite regularly that, according to all of their statistics and customer feedback they're getting, that their service has improved dramatically since that time. But that's not quite enough for us. We want to hold their feet fully to the fire. And so we will be rerunning that survey in the autumn to mark the three-year anniversary of the survey, to make sure that that our members agree that the service really has improved in that period of time. The other thing that I would like to mention as well is the Boundary Disputes Protocol, which is a process which parties can follow to avoid the mess of court litigation over boundary disputes. That is a document that was prepared in conjunction with the PLA and endorsed and encouraged by the PLA. And that has now become the go-to document for potential litigants out there that want to find a way through the mire of boundary disputes. And I think that's a really good illustration of how we can react to problems and provide a solution, even without the help of government.
Details also available on EGI, I believe. Now, you mentioned earlier on in the context of leasehold reform how you there was disappointment that that's not proceeding in the 13th programme and what have you. And it must be sometimes a little bit frustrating that law reform can be a slow process, and with the sort of political elements involved and the sort of demands on the time of government, particularly obviously at the moment with Brexit, as you mentioned. Is it frustrating to see sort of important and much sought after reforms go unaddressed or unimplemented?
Yes.
shall I expand?
Can anything be done about that?
It is frustrating and it is very difficult. Mm. And I would say that that makes the job of the LRC more important, mm-hmm. not less important. So it's no longer sufficient for us just to, you know, write an article or have a meeting and talk about these pressing areas for law reform. We've got to be a bit more creative than that. Unfortunately, we now have Liz Peace, our president, mm-hmm. and she is plugged into government, parliament, mm-hmm. politicians, and we are seeking to leverage those connections and use her to help further our reform cause. So we've got lots of different initiatives which are currently on the boil. Drafting private members' bills, speaking to MPs, speaking to law lords, taking part in law commission advisory groups, which are, for example, putting together a programme of reform for long residential leaseholds. I mean, mm-hmm. this is a big area of concern mm-hmm. for the government. It's probably the one real estate issue that the government is interested in. Mm-hmm. But if they're going to change the rules around ground rents and long leases and service charges, why not include in that program of reform something obvious like the 1987 Act? Mm-hmm. And in a way, that would make for a more balanced program where, yes, absolutely, you have to recognize and look after the rights of those residential occupiers, but it doesn't mean that the property owners have got no interest in that either. And the rules can be changed to make it a more balanced system. So we've got a whole kind of series of initiatives that we built up with Liz to help kind of crack that problem of a government which is rather distracted by other things.
And but let's not forget, we also have the common law and case precedent, mm-hmm. and our litigators are at the coalface. So we have a lot of very high profile cases going through at the senior courts at the moment. Mm-hmm. I won't name them now, but there's a lot to watch. So mm-hmm. It's very active.
So it's an interesting time.
It is.
And so lastly, you mentioned early on that you perceive one of the problems the PLA has is that people don't perhaps know about you and your work as well as they should. So let's give you the opportunity here. If there's one thing you want people to know about the PLA, what would it be?
Well, I'll try and be brief on this. I think I'd say the PLA is committed to being at the forefront of developments in our field, whether that's the debates on law reform or procedural change in the courts and tribunals or case law. So I think we can promise that you'll be hearing a lot more from us going forward.
Matthew, anything?
Three things. One, we exist. Two, we can help you. Three, you should come speak to us.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, both of you, for being here.
No problem.
And thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your year as Chair, Martin.
I will. Thanks.
And best of luck to the whole of the PLA.
And I can't say I've only got half a year left in office. My office is indefinite. I'm here forever.
All right. Thank you both.
Cheers. Thank you.